All right. Hello. Hi, everyone. I just got back from having breakfast with Pamela Silberman and her husband, Mark, which I guess her name's not Pamela Silberman anymore because she's married to Mark Mills, so Pamela Mills. And Jacqueline, I think she may have texted you. You may not have recognized it. You got the text. Yeah. Okay, good. So, excellent. I didn't know if you would ignore it because you didn't know the number. You know, some people do that. Yeah. All right, then what I'm going to do is start with a song. So let me share the screen. And I think I need to enlarge this. Last time I made this a little smaller. Oh, come on, BB. We'll just put it right there for now. Here's the song.
Oh, this love so sweet as pain and pleasure meet, the deepest joy unending. But tell me, what am I to do? Everything is you. The song, the singer, the singing, and I'm already home. I'm already home. Oh, I feel the winds blow cold and see this child growing old. I'm already home. Even now your veil is wearing thin. My love, I can see this web you spin. All is still and the moon is glowing. And just like waking from a dream, in silent moments I've seen, there's truly nothing here but the four winds blowing. And I'm already home. I'm already home. Though I feel the winds blow cold and see this child growing old, I'm already home. I'm already home.
So we are here for the Tao Te Ching, chapter 27. So I'll start with Derek Lynn. Good traveling does not leave tracks. Good speech does not seek faults. Good reckoning does not use counters. Good closure needs no bar and yet cannot be opened. Good knot needs no rope and yet cannot be untied. Therefore, sages often save others, and so do not abandon anyone. They often save things, and so do not abandon anything. This is called following enlightenment. Therefore, the good person is the teacher of the bad person. The bad person is the resource of the good person. Those who do not value their teachers and do not love their resources, although intelligent, they are greatly confused. This is called the essential wonder. So I'm going to go ahead and read Wayne Dyer, number 27. A knower of the truth travels without leaving a trace, speaks without causing harm, gives without keeping an account. The door he shuts, though having no lock, cannot be opened. The knot he ties, though using no cord, cannot be undone. Be wise and help all beings impartially, abandoning none. Waste no opportunities. This is called following the light. What is a good man but a bad man's teacher? What is a bad man but a good man's job? If the teacher is not respected and the student not cared for, confusion will arise, however clever one is. This is the great secret. All right, let's look at Stephen Mitchell, and then we'll look at the whole. Stephen Mitchell says, a good traveler has no fixed plans and is not intent on arriving. Again, you know, we have that creative license here. He always changes it a little bit. A good artist lets his intuition lead him wherever it wants. A good scientist has freed himself of concepts and keeps his mind open to what is. Thus, the master is available to all people and doesn't reject anyone. He is ready to use all situations and doesn't waste anything. This is called embodying the light. What is a man but a bad man's teacher? And what is a bad man but a good man's job? If you don't understand this, you will get lost, however intelligent you are. It is the great secret. So I'm going to go with the one that feels like the middle of the road translation. And we may look back at the others, but the middle of the road feels like, to me, Wayne Dyer. But there was some value in the others, so we may occasionally pick them up and see how they translated too. In fact, I'm even going to do it right from the beginning. Wayne Dyer says, a knower of the truth travels without leaving a trace. And Derek Lynn said, good traveling does not leave tracks. Interestingly, I was trying to decide whether I should even bring this up, but I will. Interestingly, Stephen Mitchell says something completely different. He says, a good traveler has no fixed plans and is not intent upon arriving. I think I'll start with that and go back to the other two. The reason I want to start with this is because I have quoted this many times. I've taken many trips that I've taken people on with me. I've gone to Israel 3 times and taken people with me. Although I've been to India 3 times, only twice did I take groups with me. So I've been to India 2 times and taken groups with me. And I've been to Italy 1 time and taken groups with me. And usually I send people emails all throughout the process, you know, about, you know, what to bring with them and all this kind of stuff to help prepare them for the trip as much as possible. but typically my last email to the groups just before we begin the trip. I quote this as Stephen Mitchell has written it. A good traveler has no fixed plans and is not intent upon arriving. Because what invariably happens when you're traveling is, you know, there are flight delays, luggage gets lost. And I kind of want to help people understand that the journey is already in progress and to enjoy the journey no matter what it looks like for you, right? But in life, you know, we need to take that same attitude into life, not just into overseas trips. You know, we all have these ideas about how the day is supposed to go, the week, the year, the life. And, you know, life goes in its own way. And so a good traveler does not have fixed plans and is not intent on arriving. I will tell you all that Jacqueline and I are now in the process of creating a plan for next May, when, according to the plan, I will shift out of the president minister position and shift into an exempt employee, a more background position in the organization. But I am very well aware, as we are creating this plan, that this is a plan and that there's no way we're going to know what's actually going to happen until we get there. And that's really the attitude that you want in life. You know, A Course in Miracles says a healed mind doesn't plan. And that often confuses people, because how can you live this life without planning? I mean, right now, Jacqueline and I need to do some pre-planning about our 2020 retreats so that we can prepare a budget that has to go to the board and be approved by the board. I mean, you know, we have to plan, right? But I think part of the question is, how seriously do you take your plans? Right? You kind of got to take the plans lightly. You got to know that this plan is, it's all, I want to say that's all it is. That's all it is a plan. You know, you have no idea what the future holds. You have no idea what twists and turns are in the road. You have no idea what guidance may show up that hasn't yet shown up. Right? When you make a plan, you're making a plan based on limited information. Last year, Jacqueline and I created a budget for this year, because, you know, that's what we have to do every year. Only one big unknown last year is when we created the budget, we were creating a budget for the first time with a retreat house. We'd never had a retreat house before. We really didn't know exactly what the expenses were going to be. We had no idea how much the utilities were going to cost, for example. We didn't know how much it was going to cost to feed people when they come. We had no idea how many people were going to come. So, you know, we had a method to our madness. We sat down and we planned out some retreats, and we guesstimated how many people were going to come to each retreat, and we guesstimated how much it cost to feed each person. And we did all this guesstimating, which turned out, if you look at the budget, to be very, very wrong. We're really way off from our guesses, you know. And at the last board meeting, when the board was looking at the budget and looking at the difference between the budget and what's actually happening, they asked me about that. And I said, well, I said, the truth is, it was kind of a wild ass guess mixed with hope. I said, you know, we had no idea. And even though this year we'll have a little more experience with the retreat house and we planned the budget, guess what? We still have no idea. I mean, that's the truth. How can you plan the future? I mean, think about how friggin' ridiculous the idea is. Most humans don't know it. Most humans don't know it, but it's a completely ridiculous idea. A plan needs to be held loosely. Yes, in our society, the way things go, you know, sometimes you just have to plan. You know, you can't like walk up to the airport the day you want to leave and hope there's a seat, because there probably won't be. You got to buy your plane ticket in advance, you know. But do you actually know if the plane's going to take off on time? Do you actually know if it's going to take off that day at all? I mean, you know, you just, so plans are, that's what they are. They're just plans. I've told Jacqueline this, that one word that I learned in Japan, we don't have an English equivalent in our language, but it's a great word. It's daisho. And the Japanese put the word daisho at the end of any sentence that talks about the future. You know, because the future, you know, the daisho basically means, you know, unless something else happens. And it's not a non-committal word. The Japanese are actually very committed to their business plans and such. It's not a non-committal word. It's just an understanding that you can't actually plan the future. You don't actually know what's going to happen. Right? So I love this. The way that Stephen Mitchell has translated this: a good traveler has no fixed plans. Notice it doesn't say no plans. It says no fixed plans, right? And is not intent upon arriving. You might not even get where you thought you were going to go. And again, that's an attitude we need to have about life. But Derek Lynn and Wayne Dyer translated that first line differently. So let's look at how they translated it. Again, Derek Lynn says, good traveling does not leave tracks. And Wayne Dyer says, a knower of the truth travels without leaving a trace. So this is kind of looking at the journey from a different perspective. Instead of looking at the plan, as Stephen Mitchell did, and having, you know, kind of a loose plan, knowing that it may or may not go the way you've planned, they're kind of looking back. And they're saying, how did you get here? You know, did you trample anyone along the way? One thing that's that I can use as an example, again, I mentioned that my friend Pamela is here. Pamela has visited me here before. And when she was here before, it was several years ago, before Awakening Together existed. It was Foundation for the Holy Spirit. And really, that was just for Gina. There wasn't anybody else involved in Foundation for the Holy Spirit. So when Pamela came, you know, I don't remember how many days she was here for, but I took a few days off from working and I just ran all over the place with her and we did all kinds of stuff. And that's the way it was back then. Now, actually, Awakening Together is a little more organized. In fact, as of, I think it's the 12th of August, we even have a PTO plan, paid time off, vacation plan, which means if I want to take a day off and run around with my friend, I got to take PTO, take it out of my PTO balance. So although I went to breakfast with her, I explained to her, you know, she wanted me to come over. She's got a house over here with a pool that she's got through VRBO. She wanted me to come over and hang out at the pool with her this afternoon. I said, I can't. I got to work. You know, if I don't work, I have to take PTO. Well, because of that little conversation, you know, just the thought crossed my mind very, very quickly about how things have changed and how, and listen to these words. You have to listen to these words very carefully. How I built this organization and I put myself under the same rules that I put everyone else under. You know, I mean, I could have built the organization and made rules that Jacqueline and Don and Cheryl had to follow that I didn't because I'm the founder. And I might have been able to get away with that. I don't know. I didn't even try. But if I had, that would have been trampling over someone else. Do you see? Right? It would have been putting myself in a different category. And that's what this is really talking about. When you travel this journey, do you put yourself in a different category from others? You know, or do you respect others? Well, as Jesus would say, it's the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have done unto you. Right? So as you're traveling this journey, are you respecting others as if they are yourself? You know, when you are building an organization and you're creating a new vacation policy, do you place yourself under the same set of rules and follow those same set of rules? Right? Or do you see yourself as an exception to the rule? You know, just as an example, as a recent example. So a knower of the truth travels without leaving a trace, meaning you don't trample over anyone else. Now, you've heard the expression about climbing the corporate ladder. You climb over others to get to the top, you know? know? Is that how you lived your life? Or did you live your life respecting others the same way that you respect yourself? Did you live your life according to the golden rule? And you'll see that this theme continues throughout the way that it's translated here by, who am I reading again? Wayne Dyer. A knower of the truth travels without leaving a trace, speaks without causing harm, gives without keeping account. Right? I mean, that's another thing. I think married couples are famous for doing this. You know, obviously married couples give to one another in different ways, but lots of married couples keep account. Yeah, well, I did this for you, and I did this for you, and I did this for you, but I don't remember the last time you did something for me, right? That's keeping account, right? A knower of truth travels without leaving a trace, speaks without causing harm, gives without keeping an account. I think you can hear the humility and love and selflessness and respect in that. You know, so you can hear the attitude towards others that is being described. It's also an attitude towards self. I mean, if I made different rules for me than for the other employees, right, I'm keeping myself apart. If I am speaking in a disrespectful way to someone, you know, let's say that somebody makes a mistake and I'm very disrespectful and angry and, you know, you should know better in the way that I talk to them about the mistake. You know, I'm saying I'm better than you with my tone of voice. And if I give, but I keep an account and I expect you to pay me back in some way, right? I'm putting myself in a special position, you know. And these things are, interestingly, what most humans do, right? Most humans live in this way. And so you can see master is very, very different from most humans. Again, to me, it's a lot like the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And most people in our society can quote that rule, whether they were religious or not. But how many people actually contemplate it and live according to it and really treat others in the way they would like to be treated? You know, which means with respect, as an equal, right? Isn't that what it means? Accepted as you are. Right? I mean, you know, it's very basic stuff. If we look at Derek Lynn, good traveling does not leave tracks. The way he translates this is a little interesting. Good speech does not seek faults. Right? How often do you seek faults in others? That's an interesting thing to ask, isn't it? Do you look for other people's mistakes? And how often do people get together and speak about the faults of whoever's not here? We call that gossip. Think about how often do we get together and speak about the faults of the one that is not here? And then again, good reckoning does not use counters. So, reckoning is a little different than giving. You know, Wayne Dyer said, gives without keeping an account. Reckoning is a little different, at least in my mind. Let's go ahead and look up reckoning, make sure I have the right definition. To me, reckoning is working things out. Let's see what the actual definition is. It's not an everyday word. I'm not even spelling it right. Good reckoning. Oh, there's a C in there. A establishing by counting or a calculation, conclude after the calculation. So it's kind of interesting to say good reckoning does not keep account because it's the action or process of calculating or estimating something. So this is a very, very interesting translation. I mean, I can certainly understand giving without keeping account, but when it comes to reckoning, keeping account is a part of the definition. So what does this mean? Well, obviously, when people come to the retreat house, we charge them because we have bills. You know, if we were really rich, we wouldn't, but we aren't, so we do. And we charge them a modest amount, you know, just, you know, what we need to really kind of pay the bills. But let's say somebody left without checking out. And let's say we contacted them, let them know, sent them a link, asked them to pay their bill, you know, from home, and they didn't. And we contacted them again, a third time, asked them to pay their bill from home, and they didn't. At some point, to be honest, we have to know when to forget about it and go on. You know, you can't hold on to that, right? You can't hold on to that. You can't hold this grievance. You certainly aren't going to take the person to court. You know, I mean, I think that's what this means. Obviously, hopefully everybody will always pay their bills. Certainly most people are going to pay their bills. But if this situation arises, you kind of have to know when to let go and move on. And in my humble opinion, you also have to realize it's not even a loss. The only loss that exists is in your mind. I remember Pamela and I used to offer these annual retreats called Be the Love. I don't remember how many we did. We did several of them. But there was one teacher in particular we hired to speak at one of our retreats. And we bought her plane ticket in advance, like we always did for all of our speakers. And just a week before, she decided not to come. And I remember Pamela was actually a little upset, which, you know, many of you will probably understand. Pamela was actually a little upset because the money we'd spent on her plane ticket was just lost. You know, there's no way, as you know, you can't get plane ticket money back nowadays. And I remember telling her, just watch, we will go on and we will never actually miss that. It was $500. We'll never actually miss that $500 unless we keep thinking about it. And it's true. You know, we went on, we had that conference, we had another conference, we had another conference. It's not like the day arrived where, gosh, we could have had one more if we just had that $500. You know, we're $500 short of paying the deposit. You know, like it never happened, right? The $500 was only a loss if we held it in our minds. And that goes in with all of us all the time. Like you might buy something and then it doesn't work so well. And for some reason you can't return it. You're like, dang, that costs $89. But the truth is, it's only a thought. Like, have you ever been $89 short of eating the next day? If you hadn't bought that thing, you could have ate. You know, like it never happens. So I think that's what this is really referring to, is even in reckoning, we do not use counters. And again, reckoning is keeping accounts, right? So even in that, we don't use counters. You know, it doesn't mean that we don't still pay our bills and charge people and, you know, and stuff. But when something doesn't work out the way it is intended to, and it's clear it's not going to, you just let it go. You don't hold on to it. You don't keep track of the guy that didn't pay the bill or the guy that broke something and didn't pay for that or whatever it is. You know, because if you do, you're just carrying stress and a grievance that you don't need to carry. What happened, happened. It's in the past. Move on. So it's a very interesting translation. So again, Wayne Dyer says, a knower of the truth travels without leaving a trace, speaks without causing harm, gives without keeping an account, Derek Lynn says, good traveling does not leave tracks. Good speech does not seek faults. Good reckoning does not use counters. And I almost think Derek Lynn challenges us a little more in our spiritual point of view, right? Stephen Mitchell goes off in his own direction, but let's look at his direction. We already looked at a good traveler has no fixed plans and is not intent upon arriving. A good artist lets his intuition lead him wherever it wants. So even though that's a very unique translation, it's still something worth considering. We could each think of ourselves as an artist living this life, right? This life, this character is a drawing in the painting of God. And we're each an artist living this. So a good artist lets his intuition lead him wherever it wants. You hear that? Jacqueline was recently reading from the section on trust in the Manual for Teachers from the Course in Miracles. And one of the things I've always loved about that section is when it gets to a more advanced trust, it says that the teacher of God asks what he wants. Not asks for what he wants. Asks, what do I want now? And what do I want now? And what do I want now? It's kind of the same as the inner Ramana teaching, what am I to do now? But maybe even slightly more beautiful. Because you're assuming the guidance you receive is what you truly want. You just didn't know it till you received the guidance. Right? What do I want now? What do I want now? Right? And that's really what this line is pointing to. A good artist lets his intuition lead him wherever it wants. You know, in NTI it says that your will and God's will is the same. So again, whatever, you know, a lot of people are afraid to follow guidance because they're afraid guidance will take them into something, some situation they don't want to go into. But that's confusion about what you really are. Right? The guidance knows what you want better than you do. Right? That's the point. It knows what you want better than you do. It knows how to make you happy better than you do. So a good artist lets his intuition lead him wherever it wants. A good scientist has freed himself of concepts and keeps his mind open to what is. So that's the non-definition. You know, living life without defining. You know, even one simple place to practice this, although it's not simple, it can be challenging to do, but it's at the same time, when you get the hang of it, it's quite simple. Try living your life without defining the people you know. Jasmine's sitting here right next to me, so now she's going to hear me tell a story about her. But I remember when we lived in North Carolina, and Laurent lived with us. Jasmine was never a big Laurent fan. And there are a couple times Laurent and I went somewhere. Jasmine was old enough to leave home for a little bit while we went to the grocery store or something like that. So there were a couple times when Laurent and I would go somewhere and get home a little late, and Jasmine was always mad. Like if we said we'd be home 7:30, we got home at 8, she'd be mad. You know, she wanted us to be on time. And so I remember one day we went to the store, and then on the way home, I think Laurent wanted something from McDonald's. And we pulled into the McDonald's drive-thru, and it was one of those days when it's just taken for friggin' ever, you know, it wasn't this quick thing. And I remember thinking, when we get home, Jasmine's going to be so mad. And then I thought, I don't know that. I mean, it came right on the I don't know that. I mean, yes, in the past, we have gotten home before, and she has been angry. But do I actually know for a fact that she's going to be angry today? Or am I defining her? And I chose to let go of that thought. And to the best of my recollection, that day she happened to not be angry. You know, she's probably interested in a TV show or something and hadn't even noticed, right? But, you know, the point of the story is, especially the people we live with, you know, based on past history with them and all that, we think we know them. And we then begin to define their future behavior, you know. And I think that's what this is kind of pointing to when it says a good scientist has freed himself of concepts and keeps his mind open to what is. You know, let this person be however they're being in the moment. And even remember that what's really being here, I don't know if you listen to the song that I played, but in the song that I played, Already Home, I can't remember the exact line, but it was something like, how do I be, or how do I understand when you, speaking to God, when you are the singer, the song, and the singing, you know? What do I do when you are the singer, the song, or this and the singing? And the contemplation in that is, you know, where is the I? You know, am I the singer? No, you're the singer. Am I the song? No, you're the song. Am I the singing? No, you're the singing. You know, I mean, contemplating that everything that is happening now in the language of Kabbalah is creationing. Right? It's all God playing. And if you see everything as ongoing creationing, every moment is fresh, it's all God playing, then maybe you can let go of your definitions of who these people are in your life. You know, we box them in. This is who they are and how they're going to behave in a particular circumstance. And of course, what we don't understand is that our believing is a part of the creationing process and may be exactly what keeps them stuck in that definition, right? So it's kind of like, you know, we're creating the devil that we think we know. You know, so a good scientist has freed himself of concepts and keeps his mind open to what is creationing, and lets creationing be fresh in each moment without us applying the past to it, asking it to stay within this box of what we think it should be. Now going back to Wayne Dyer, a knower of the truth travels without leaving a trace, speaks without causing harm, gives without keeping an account. The door he shuts, though having no lock, cannot be opened. I got to be honest, I don't really know what Lao Tzu meant when he wrote that line. I only know how it speaks to my heart. And the way it speaks to my heart is, if I choose, for example, to let go of the definition of Jasmine as one who gets angry every time I'm late, nothing, not even Jasmine getting angry when I get home, can cause me to pick that definition back up again, right? If I let go of the opportunity to see you as bad or guilty, or to see myself as bad or guilty, nothing, not even a mistake or an argument that we happen to get into, can force me to pick that back up again. The door he shuts, though having no lock, cannot be opened. And let's just talk about letting go of the belief that I am bad or you are bad. And let's assume that I let go of this belief and an argument does happen. You and I actually get in an argument. Now, maybe we catch ourselves, or one of us catches ourselves, and it doesn't go on for days. But boy, it happened. You know, that can be seen as just something that happened. That can be seen very neutrally. It does not mean that I have to re-pick up the idea that either I'm bad or you're bad or both. This happened, you know, Jacqueline said this. This thought raced through my mind. I wasn't alert enough to discern in that moment. I believed the thought, and so I said this. You know, I'm guessing something raced through her mind because then she said this, right? You know, I mean, that's just describing what happened, right? A thought raced through. I didn't discern. I believed it. It caused me that. Then I said this, and then she said this, and then she said. But you see, there doesn't have to be any I'm bad or she's bad in it. It all just happened. Now, I'm describing the truth of how it happened. We were not discerning in the moment. We were believing thoughts. Does that mean we're bad? No. It means we were not discerning in the moment. And we were believing thoughts. That's what it means, right? So the door he shuts, though having no lock, cannot be opened. If we really, truly let go of something, nothing can make us pick it up again. No situation. The knot he ties, though using no cord, cannot be undone. Now, again, I don't know what Lao Tzu meant when he wrote that, but this to me kind of speaks like the opposite side of the coin. The knot he ties is binding myself to something. So the love I choose to embrace with all humans, right? Nothing can force me not to love. You know, Jacqueline and I could have this plan that I'm going to semi-retire in May, and we could get all the way up there, and on May 11th, 2 days before it's supposed to happen, she could say, never mind, I quit. Does that mean I have to not love her now, right? Does that mean I have to not love her now? No. If I choose to love under all circumstances, then the knot that I've tied cannot be undone. You see? So what these two sentences are talking about, at least in the way I hear them, is the power of decision is my own, to quote a Course lesson. The power of decision is my own. And nothing that happens in the world can undo that if I genuinely make that decision. And I don't think Derek Lynn really says anything different. He just says it differently. Good closure needs no bar and yet cannot be opened. Good knot needs no rope and yet cannot be untied. So let's move on to the next paragraph. Be wise and help all beings impartially, abandoning none. You know, I have, I'm going to call it limited time. You know, time, there's only so much time in a day, and there are a number of things to do. And one of the things I felt guided to way back in 2011, August of 2011, I remember exactly when it happened. Up until that time, I used to do lots of one-on-one counseling with people. I would spend a lot of time on the phone talking to people. In August of 2011, I was guided to let that go. And I've never been guided to pick that back up. And of course, in August of 2011, I didn't know what was coming next, but now I kind of have hindsight. And what happened in 2012 was when I took that increased year of silence where I did all that contemplation of the seven steps. I couldn't have been doing that if I was counseling people all day. I needed that year of increased silence. And then in 2013 is when we started Awakening Together, and my, you could say my business life, because there's a lot of business behind Awakening Together, has been very, very full. And there would not be time for all of that counseling. So, you know, when I look back on the guidance now, I just see it as practical. You know, it somehow knew what was coming, and it knew that the counseling had to be let go. But I don't feel that I've abandoned anyone. If people write to me and they ask for counseling, if I can find someone else that's willing to do that, I pass it on. But if not, what I tell them is, I do not have the time to counsel people one-on-one, but I teach so that everyone can hear the teachings, right? So, and I might point them to a couple of teachings I think are specifically helpful in an email, and I don't pick up the baton of counseling again because I know I'm not supposed to. So you could say the form of the help has changed, but the helping has not, right? No one is abandoned. And what if one day I am guided to completely lay down the teaching and walk away and not do it anymore at all? I still don't feel like I would be abandoning anyone, because I feel like through my guidance, the universe, Holy Spirit, consciousness, whatever you want to call it, is building an entire organization kind of in my wake, with ministers and people who are there who will have that knowledge to continue on. And my guess is, if everybody plays their role in the way they're guided, the helpfulness is actually going to be bigger than it was when I was doing it all by myself and talking to those 20 people or so on the phone, right? And it's already bigger than those 20 or so people that I talked to on the phone. So the reason I do not see myself as abandoning anyone is because I'm not looking at the helpfulness as coming from this body. Like, I have to help. I see consciousness as having a plan. I am just one part of that plan. You know, this body is just one part of that plan. And my job is to do my part, which is to follow the intuition that I'm giving, no matter what it is, and trust that everyone is being taken care of perfectly through consciousness, which is our one self, which is our one soul, which is our one heart, and which does love every one of us equally. So the only way that I could treat people impartially and abandon some is to put too much value on this body. Otherwise, it's impossible. It's impossible. So again, my only job is to be that artist, right? What was it that Stephen Mitchell wrote? A good artist lets his intuition lead him wherever it wants. That's my job, right? And then through that, know that consciousness is taking care of everyone and everything perfectly, and no one is being abandoned. It's impossible for me to abandon anyone, even if I seem to walk away from everyone, if I'm following guidance. So be wise and help all beings impartially, abandoning none. Now, Stephen Mitchell says, the master is available to all people and doesn't reject anyone. I think rejection is an internal thing. Again, I may still say, if you write and ask for one-on-one counseling, I'll still say, I'm sorry, I don't do that, because I don't. But that's not a rejection. I mean, you could perceive it as one if you choose to. But a rejection is something that happens in my heart, right? A rejection is, you know, oh my God, I don't want to put up with her. She talks so much. If I get on the phone with her, you know, I'll never get this done and this done. See, that attitude in my mind, that's a rejection. So my job is not to reject, judge against, deem unworthy, not valuable, any human, right? Even if I can't personally be available for each and every one of them. And one thing that does make whether you're counseling or whether you're teaching like I do now or whatever your form of service is, even if you're being a waitress. One thing that does make it genuine service is seeing everyone as equally important, even if you don't know their name. You know, that's where the service comes from. And it doesn't matter if you're doing counseling or if you're teaching or if you're being a waitress. I mean, when you're being a waitress, you know, that's a pretty important role, actually. You know, if you be a waitress and you serve everyone as if each and every one of them is special, you know? Each and every one of them is special, and you want to give each and every one of them the best service that you can. You know, remember when they want the butter to go and get the butter and bring it back, because you want to in your heart, because you want to serve that person. You see, it's the same as teaching. You know, you don't reject anyone, even the one who sits there and complains and complains and complains. You know, you may not be able to serve in a way that you can stop their complaining, because complaining may just be the nature they're choosing right now. But you don't have to reject them in your heart. You may have to let go of any ideas that you might have of a tip. You may have to let go of that accounting that we talked about earlier. But you don't have to reject them in your heart. Right, this is, if you guys saw Peaceful Warrior, this is what Socrates tried to explain about his job of working at a service station. Right? At first, Dan Millman was kind of like, how enlightened are you? You work at a gas station. You know, those weren't his exact words, but that was his attitude. You know, and Socrates is kind of like, it's service. You see? Service is serving everyone equally in your heart. Physically, may not be possible depending on your job. Right? It's serving everyone equally in your heart. Kind of like the beggars on the street. You know, most of us do not have the kind of money where we can hand out money to every single beggar we see. If you live in a place like Colorado or in a city, you know, there's a lot of homeless people on the street begging. I mean, it's just not even really possible. But you can look every one of them in the eye and smile. You can respect and love each and every one of them. Right? That's what this is talking about. It's an inner thing. And then the outer happens, you know, in the way the outer happens. But the inner thing is what's much more important. So be wise and help all beings impartially, abandoning none. Waste no opportunities. Right? Waste no opportunities to love each and every person. And again, it doesn't have to be external. And one of the biggest mistakes that spiritual students make, I've heard it over and over and over and over again in my, you know, however many years I've been on this path. One of the biggest mistakes that spiritual students make is wanting the kind response return. You know, I've heard people so many times, well, you know, I just smiled and said hi to him and then he snapped at me. Well, that's not what this is. This isn't about whether he is embracing the opportunity. This is about whether we are embracing the opportunity. And just because he snaps at me instead of returning my smile and my kindness, remember what we read up above, the knot that we tie cannot be undone. So if we choose to love all humans, if that's our goal, you see, that's a different goal than trying to get people to see that I'm loving, right? And to feel good because I love them. That's a different goal. If my goal is just to love each and every human, it doesn't matter how other humans are to me. No one can undo that decision if I choose to make that decision. Right? Be wise and help all beings impartially, abandoning none. Waste no opportunities. I love that. Waste no opportunities. This is called following the light. Now, the next paragraph is kind of interesting. We'll see if we can cover it in 4 minutes. What is a good man but a bad man's teacher? Again, I don't know what Lao Tzu meant by that. But what that says to me is if I am living up to my inner aspirations, like loving all people, there's the possibility that someone may see something in me that sparks something in them, right? And I just have to hold on to that as a possibility. But I know I was sparked by Peace Pilgrim's story, by her example, right? So it's not that I'm going to go out there and try and teach all of these people. And you got to take the word bad man loosely here, I think. But it's not like I'm going to go out there and try and teach all these people. I'm just going to be. I'm going to live my own demonstration for me. But that might spark something in others. So what is a good man but a bad man's teacher? Right? It might spark something in someone else. And what is a bad man but a good man's job? Again, I don't take that as I'm supposed to change that person anyway, but this is my opportunity still to live up to my highest aspirations. When someone is really rude and unfair to me, that's a great opportunity for me to stick to my internal aspiration to love always, right? So both as the teacher, you know, the one who's living by demonstration, that's me following my aspiration. And then when I come across the bad man who you know, is really rude and unfair to me, steals from me, that is still my opportunity to live up to my aspiration, right? It's not that, you know, that's what everything is. Everything is my opportunity to live up to my aspiration. And we've already read, waste no opportunities. What is a good man but a bad man's teacher? What is a bad man but a good man's job? If the teacher is not respected and the student not cared for, confusion will arise, however clever one is. Now again, I still read this as if it's talking to me. So when this says if the teacher is not respected, I need to take into account what are my teachers. You know, my teacher is the inner teacher that needs to be respected. There are some outer forms that I would say have been my teachers. They need to be respected. There are those who challenge me. They are my teachers. They need to be respected, right? I mean, the longer I think about this, the more teachers I'm going to come up with for me to respect. Right? So even the person that I pass on the street at times is my teacher, needs to be respected. If the teacher is not respected and the student is not cared for, now who are the students? Well, the students may be those who are learning from my example. And you know, that does happen. And I need to love and care for them. But I also need to love and care for myself as a student because I'm going to make mistakes, right? So the student is both myself and others, and the student has to be loved and cared for. And if I do not respect the teacher and do not respect the student, confusion will arise. This is the great secret. So again, guess what this is talking about? It's that same equality of love. Loving in all directions, you know, I'm going to say myself and outwardly, inwardly and outwardly. Loving in all directions, at all times, embracing every opportunity that challenges that decision to love as an opportunity to stay with my decision to love, and wasting no opportunities. And with that, I've gone over a minute, so I need to let go of the mic.